giving you back your old job?
Yes.
And then Audrey went to visit her sister for a week. This was, oh, a year, 13 months after you'd gone away? Her voice lacked expression. Each word was flat and dull, like pebbles dropped one by one into a deep well.
Robbie came over. We got drunk together. We did it on the floor of the bedroom. It was good. It was really good.
I didn't need to hear that.
No, I'm sorry. It's harder to pick and choose when you're dead. It's like a photograph, you know. It doesn't matter as much.
It matters to me.
Laura lit another cigarette. Her movements were fluid and competent, not stiff. Shadow wondered for a moment if she was dead at all. Perhaps this was some kind of elaborate trick.
Yes, she said. I see that. Well, we carried on our affair, although we didn't call it that. We did not call it anything. For most of the last 2 years.
Were you going to leave me for him?
Why would I do that? You're my big bear. You're my puppy. You did what you did for me. I waited 3 years for you to come back to me. I love you.
He stopped himself from saying, I love you, too. He wasn't going to say that. Not anymore.
So what happened the other night?
The night I was killed?
Yes.
Well, Robbie and I went out to talk about your welcome back surprise party. It would have been so good. And I told him that we were done, finished. That now that you were back, that was the way it had to be.
Hmm. Thank you, babe.
You're welcome, darling.
The ghost of a smile crossed her face.
We got maudlin. It was sweet. We got stupid. I got very drunk. He didn't. He had to drive. We were driving home, and I announced that I was going to give him a goodbye blowjob. One last time with feeling. And I unzipped his pants, and I did.
Big mistake.
Tell me about it. I knocked the gear shift with my shoulder, and then Robbie was trying to push me out of the way to put the car back in gear. And we were swerving, and there was a loud crunch. And I remember the world started to roll and to spin, and I thought, I'm going to die. It was very dispassionate. I remember that. I wasn't scared. And then I don't remember anything more.
There was a smell like burning plastic. It was the cigarette. Shadow realized it had burned down to the filter. Laura didn't seem to have noticed.
What are you doing here, Laura?
Can't a wife come and see her husband?
You're dead. I went to your funeral this afternoon.
Yes.
She stopped talking, stared into nothing. Shadow stood up and walked over to her. He took the smoldering cigarette butt from her fingers and threw it out of the window.
Well?
Her eyes sought his.
I don't know much more than I did when I was alive. Most of the stuff I know now that I didn't know then, I can't put into words.
Normally, people who die stay in their graves, said Shadow.
Do they? Do they really, puppy? I used to think they did, too. Now I'm not so sure. Perhaps.
She climbed off the bed and walked over to the window. Her face, in the light of the motel sign, was as beautiful as it had ever been. The face of the woman he had gone to prison for. His heart hurt in his chest as if someone had taken it in a fist and squeezed.
Laura.
She didn't look at him. You've gotten yourself mixed up in some bad things, Shadow. You're going to screw it up if someone isn't there to watch out for you. I'm watching out for you. And thank you for my present.
What present?
She reached into the pocket of her blouse and pulled out the gold coin he had thrown into the grave earlier that day. There was still black dirt on it.
I may have it put on a chain. It was very sweet of you.
You're welcome.
She turned then and looked at him with eyes that seemed both to see and not to see him.
I think there are several aspects of our marriage we're going to have to work on.
babes, he told her. You're dead.
That's one of those aspects, obviously.
She paused.
Okay, she said. I'm going now. It'll be better if I go.
And naturally and easily, she turned and put her hands on Shadow's shoulders and went up on tiptoes to kiss him goodbye, as she had always kissed him goodbye. Awkwardly, he bent to kiss her on the cheek, but she moved her mouth as he did so and pushed her lips against his. Her breath smelled faintly of mothballs. Laura's tongue flickered into Shadow's mouth. It was cold and dry, and it tasted of cigarettes and of bile. If Shadow had had any doubts as to whether his wife was dead or not, they ended then. He pulled back.
I love you, she said simply. I'll be looking out for you.
She walked over to the motel room door. There was a strange taste in his mouth.
Get some sleep, puppy, she told him, and stay out of trouble.
She opened the door to the hall. The fluorescent light in the hallway was not kind. Beneath it, Laura looked dead. But then, it did that to everyone.
You could have asked me to stay the night, she said in her cold stone voice.
I don't think I could, said Shadow.
You will, hon, she said, before all this is over. You will.
She turned away from him and walked down the corridor. Shadow looked out of the doorway. The night clerk kept on reading his John Grisham novel and barely looked up as she walked past him. There was thick graveyard mud clinging to her shoes. And then she was gone. Shadow breathed out, a slow sigh. His heart was pounding arrhythmically in his chest. He walked across the hall and knocked on Wednesday's door. As he knocked, he got the weirdest notion that he was being buffeted by black wings, as if an enormous crow was flying through him out into the hall and the world beyond. Wednesday opened the door. He had a white motel towel wrapped around his waist, but was otherwise naked.
"What the hell do you want?"
he asked. "Something you should know," said Shadow. "Maybe it was a dream, but it wasn't. Or maybe I inhaled some of the fat kid's synthetic toadskin smoke, or probably I'm just going mad."
Yeah, spit it out," said Wednesday. "I'm kind of in the middle of something here."
Shadow glanced into the room. He could see that there was someone in the bed watching him. A sheet pulled up over small breasts. Pale blonde hair, something rattish about the face. He lowered his voice. "I just saw my wife," he said. "She was in my room."
"A ghost, you mean? You saw a ghost?"
"No, not a ghost. She was solid. It was her. She's dead all right, but it wasn't any kind of a ghost. I touched her. She kissed me."
"I see."
Wednesday darted a look at the woman in the bed.
"Be right back, my dear," he said.
They crossed the hall to Shadow's room. Wednesday turned on the lamps. He looked at the cigarette butt in the ashtray. He scratched his chest. His nipples were dark, old man nipples, and his chest hair was grizzled. There was a white scar down one side of his torso. He sniffed the air, then he shrugged.
"Okay," he said. "So your dead wife showed up. You scared?"
"A little."
"Very wise. The dead always give me the screaming memes. Anything else?"
"I'm ready to leave Eagle Point. Laura's mother can sort out the apartment, all that. She hates me anyway. I'm ready to go when you are." Wednesday smiled.
"Good news, my boy. We'll leave in the morning. Now, you should get some sleep. I have some scotch in my room if you need help sleeping, yes?"
"No, I'll be fine."
"Then do not disturb me further. I have a long night ahead of me."
"Good night," said Shadow.
"Exactly,"
said Wednesday. And he closed the door as he went out. Shadow sat down on the bed. The smell of cigarettes and preservatives lingered in the air. He wished that he were mourning Laura. It seemed more appropriate than being troubled by her, or, he admitted it to himself now that she had gone, just a little scared by her. It was time to mourn. He turned the lights out and lay on the bed, and thought of Laura as she was before he went to prison. He remembered their marriage when they were young and happy and stupid and unable to keep their hands off each other. It had been a very long time since Shadow had cried. So long, he thought, he had forgotten how. He hadn't even cried when his mother died. But he began to cry now, in painful, lurching sobs. And for the first time since he was a small boy, Shadow cried himself to sleep.
This ends Disc 2. American Gods, Disc 3.
Coming to America, A.D. 813. They navigated the green sea by the stars and by the shore. And when the shore was only a memory, and the night sky was overcast and dark, they navigated by faith. And they called on the All-Father to bring them safely to land once more. A bad journey they had of it, their fingers numb and with a shiver in their bones that not even wine could burn off. They would wake in the morning to see that the hoarfrost had touched their beards, and until the sun warmed them, they looked like old men, white-bearded before their time. Teeth were loosening, and eyes were deep-sunken in their sockets when they made landfall on the green land to the west. The men said, "We are far, far from our homes and our hearths, far from the seas we know and the lands we love. Here on the edge of the world we will be forgotten by our gods." Their leader clambered to the top of a great rock, and he mocked them for their lack of faith. "The All-Father made the world," he shouted. "He built it with his hands from the shattered bones and flesh of Ymir, his grandfather. He placed Ymir's brains in the sky as clouds, and his salt blood became the seas we crossed. If he made the world, do you not realize that he created this land as well? And if we die here as men, shall we not be received into his hall?" And the men cheered and laughed. They set to, with a will, to build a hall out of split trees and mud, inside a small stockade of sharpened logs, although as far as they knew, they were the only men in the new land. On the day that the hall was finished, there was a storm. The sky at midday became as dark as night, and the sky was rent with forks of white flame, and the thunder crashes were so loud that the men were almost deafened by them. And the ship's cat they had brought with them for good fortune hid beneath their beached longboat. The storm was hard enough and vicious enough that the men laughed and clapped each other on the back, and they said, "The Thunderer is here with us in this distant land." And they gave thanks and rejoiced, and they drank until they were reeling. In the smoky darkness of their hall that night, the bard sang them the old songs. He sang of Odin, the All-Father, who was sacrificed to himself as bravely and as nobly as others were sacrificed to him. He sang of the 9 days that the All-Father hung from the world tree, his side pierced and dripping from the spear-point's wound. And he sang them all the things the All-Father had learned in his agony, 9 names and 9 ruins and 9 charms. When he told them of the spear piercing Odin's side, the bard shrieked in pain as the All-Father himself had called out in his agony, and all the men shivered, imagining his pain. They found the Skraeling the following day, which was the All-Father's own day. He was a small man, his long hair black as a crow's wing, his skin the color of rich red clay. He spoke in words none of them could understand, not even their bard, who had been on a ship that had sailed through the Pillars of Hercules, and who could speak the trader's pigeon men spoke all across the Mediterranean. The stranger was dressed in feathers and in furs, and there were small bones braided into his long hair. They led him into their encampment, and they gave him roasted meat to eat and strong drink to quench his thirst. They laughed riotously at the man as he stumbled and sang, at the way his head rolled and lolled, and this on less than a drinking horn of mead. They gave him more drink, and soon enough he lay beneath the table, with his head curled under his arm. Then they picked him up, a man at each shoulder, a man at each leg, carried him at shoulder height, the four men making him an eight-legged horse, and they carried him at the head of a procession to an ash tree on the hill overlooking the bay, where they put a rope around his neck and hung him high in the wind, their tribute to the All-Father, the gallows lord. The Skraeling's body swung in the wind, his face blackening, his tongue protruding, his eyes popping, his penis hard enough to hang a leather helmet on, while the men cheered and shouted and laughed, proud to be sending their sacrifice to the heavens. And the next day, when two huge ravens landed upon the Skraeling's corpse, one on each shoulder, and commenced to peck at its cheeks and eyes, the men knew their sacrifice had been accepted. It was a long winter, and they were hungry. But they were cheered by the thought that when spring came they would send the boat back to the Northlands, and it would bring settlers, and bring women. As the weather became colder, and the days became shorter, some of the men took to searching for the Skraeling village, hoping to find food and women. They found nothing, save for the places where fires had been, where small encampments had been abandoned. One midwinter's day, when the sun was as distant and cold as a dull silver coin, they realized that the remains of the Skraeling's body had been removed from the ash tree. That afternoon it began to snow, in huge, slow flakes. The men from the Northlands closed the gates of their encampment, retreated behind their wooden wall. The Skraeling war party fell upon them that night. 500 men to 30. They climbed the wall, and over the following 7 days they killed each of the 30 men in 30 different ways. And the sailors were forgotten by history and their people. The wall they tore down, and the village they burned. The longboat, upside down and pulled high on the shingle, they also burned, hoping that the pale strangers had but one boat, and that by burning it they were ensuring that no other Northmen would come to their shores. It was more than 100 years before Leif the Fortunate, son of Eric the Red, rediscovered that land, which he would call Vinland. His gods were already waiting for him when he arrived. Tyr, one-handed, and Grey Odin, gallows god, and Thor of the Thunders. They were there. They were waiting. Chapter 4. Let the midnight special shine its light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. The midnight special. Traditional. Shadow and Wednesday ate breakfast at a country kitchen across the street from their motel. It was 8 in the morning, and the world was misty and chill. "You still ready to leave Eagle Point?" asked Wednesday. "I have some calls to make, if you are. Friday today. Friday's a free day. A woman's day. Saturday tomorrow. Much to do on Saturday." "I'm ready," said Shadow. "Nothing keeping me here." Wednesday heaped his plate high with several kinds of breakfast meats. Shadow took some melon, a bagel, and a packet of cream cheese. They went and sat down in a booth. "That was some dream you had last night," said Wednesday. "Yes," said Shadow, "it was." Laura's muddy footprints had been visible on the motel carpet when he got up that morning, leading from his bedroom to the lobby and out the door. "So," said Wednesday, "why'd they call you Shadow?" Shadow shrugged. "It's a name," he said. Outside the plate glass, the world in the mist had become a pencil drawing executed in a dozen different grays, with here and there a smudge of electric red or pure white. "How'd you lose your eye?" Wednesday shoveled half a dozen pieces of bacon into his mouth, chewed, wiped the fat from his lips with the back of his hand. "Didn't lose it," he said. "I still know exactly where it is." "So, what's the plan?" Wednesday looked thoughtful. He ate several vivid pink slices of ham, picked a fragment of meat from his beard, dropped it onto his plate.
"Plan is as follows. Tomorrow night we shall be meeting with a number of persons preeminent in their respective fields. Do not let their demeanor intimidate you. We shall meet at one of the most important places in the entire country. Afterward we shall wine and dine them. I need to enlist them in my current enterprise."
"And where is this important place?"
"You'll see, my boy. I said one of them. Opinions are justifiably divided. I have sent word to my colleagues. We'll stop off in Chicago on the way, as I need to pick up some money. Entertaining, in the manner we shall need to entertain, will take more ready cash than I currently have available. Then, on to Madison."
Wednesday paid, and they left. Walked back across the road to the motel parking lot. Wednesday tossed Shadow the car keys. He drove down to the freeway and out of town.
"You going to miss it?"
asked Wednesday. He was sorting through a folder filled with maps.
"The town? No, I didn't really ever have a life here. I was never in one place too long as a kid, and I didn't get here until I was in my 20s. So this town is Laura's."
"Let's hope she stays here," said Wednesday.
"It was a dream," said Shadow. "Remember."
"That's good," said Wednesday. "Healthy attitude to have. Did you fuck her last night?"
Shadow took a breath, then,
"That is none of your damn business." "And no.
Did you want to?"
Shadow said nothing at all. He drove north toward Chicago. Wednesday chuckled and began to pore over his maps, unfolding and refolding them, making occasional notes on a yellow legal pad with a large silver ballpoint pen. Eventually he was finished. He put his pen away, put the folder on the back seat.
"The best thing about the states we're heading for," said Wednesday, "Minnesota, Wisconsin, all around there, is it has the kind of women I liked when I was younger. Pale-skinned and blue-eyed, hair so fair it's almost white, wine-colored lips, and round, full breasts with the veins running through them, like a good cheese."
"Only when you were younger?" asked Shadow. "Looked like you were doing pretty good last night."
"Yes," Wednesday smiled. "Would you like to know the secret of my success?"
"You pay them?"
"Nothing so crude, no. The secret is charm, pure and simple."
"Charm, huh? Well, like they say, you either got it or you ain't."
"Charms can be learned," said Wednesday.
Shadow tuned the radio to an oldies station and listened to songs that were current before he was born. Bob Dylan sang about a hard rain that was going to fall, and Shadow wondered if that rain had fallen yet, or if it was something that was still going to happen. The road ahead of them was empty, and the ice crystals on the asphalt glittered like diamonds in the morning sun. Chicago happened slowly, like a migraine. First they were driving through countryside, then imperceptibly the occasional town became a low suburban sprawl, and the sprawl became the city. They parked outside a squat black brownstone. The sidewalk was clear of snow. They walked to the lobby. Wednesday pressed the top button on the gouged metal intercom box. Nothing happened. He pressed it again. Then, experimentally, he began to press the other buttons for other tenants, with no response.
"It's dead," said a gaunt old woman coming down the steps. "Doesn't work. We call the super, ask him when he going to fix, when he going to mend the heating. He does not care, goes to Arizona for the winter for his chest."
Her accent was thick, Eastern European, Shadow guessed. Wednesday bowed low.
"Zoria, my dear, may I say how unutterably beautiful you look? A radiant creature. You have not aged."
The old woman glared at him.
"He don't want to see you. I don't want to see you neither. You bad news."
"That's because I don't come if it isn't important."
The woman sniffed. She carried an empty string shopping bag and wore an old red coat buttoned up to her chin. She looked at Shadow suspiciously.
"Who is the big man?" she asked Wednesday. "Another one of your murderers?"
"You do me a deep disservice, good lady. This gentleman is called Shadow. He is working for me, yes, but on your behalf. Shadow, may I introduce you to the lovely Miss Zoria Vechernyaya?"
Good to meet you, said Shadow. Bird-like, the old woman peered up at him.
Shadow, she said. A good name. When the shadows are long, that is my time. And you are the long shadow.
She looked him up and down, then she smiled.
You may kiss my hand, she said, and extended a cold hand to him.
Shadow bent down and kissed her thin hand. She had a large amber ring on her middle finger.
Good boy, she said. I am going to buy groceries. You see, I am the only one of us who brings in any money. The other two cannot make money fortune-telling. This is because they only tell the truth, and the truth is not what people want to hear. It is a bad thing, and it troubles people so they do not come back. But I can lie to them, tell them what they want to hear. So I bring home the bread. Do you think you will be here for supper?
I would hope so, said Wednesday.
Then you had better give me some money to buy more food, she said. I am proud, but I am not stupid. The others are prouder than I am, and he is the proudest of all. So give me money, and do not tell them that you give me money.
Wednesday opened his wallet and reached in. He took out a 20. Zorya Vechernaya plucked it from his fingers and waited. He took out another 20 and gave it to her.
It's good, she said. We will feed you like princess. Now go up the stairs to the top. Zorya Utrenyaya is awake, but our other sister is still asleep, so do not be making too much noise.
Shadow and Wednesday climbed the dark stairs. The landing, two stories up, was half-filled with black plastic garbage bags, and it smelled of rotting vegetables.
"Are they gypsies?" asked Shadow.
"Zorya and her family? Not at all. They're not Rome. They're Russian. Slavs, I believe."
"But she does fortune-telling."
"Lots of people do fortune-telling. I dabble in it myself."
Wednesday was panting as they went up the final flight of stairs.
"I'm out of shape."
The landing at the top of the stairs ended in a single door painted red, with a peephole in it. Wednesday knocked at the door. There was no response. He knocked again, louder this time.
"Okay, okay, I heard you, I heard you!"
The sound of locks being undone, of bolts being pulled, the rattle of a chain, the red door opened, a crack.
"Who is it?"
A man's voice, old and cigarette-roughened.
"An old friend, Chernobog, with an associate."
The door opened as far as the security chain would allow. Shadow could see a gray face in the shadows, peering out at them.
"What do you want, Votan?"
"Initially, simply the pleasure of your company, and I have information to share. What's that phrase? Oh, yes, you may learn something to your advantage."
The door opened all the way. The man in the dusty bathrobe was short, with iron-gray hair and craggy features. He wore gray pinstripe pants, shiny from age, and slippers. He held an unfiltered cigarette with square-tipped fingers, sucking the tip while keeping it cupped in his fist, like a convict, thought Shadow, or a soldier. He extended his left hand to Wednesday.
"Welcome, then, Votan."
"They call me Wednesday these days," he said, shaking the old man's hand.
A narrow smile, a flash of yellow teeth.
"Yes," he said, "very funny. And this is?"
"This is my associate. Shadow, meet Mr. Chernobog."
"Well met," said Chernobog.
He shook Shadow's left hand with his own. His hands were rough and calloused, and the tips of his fingers were as yellow as if they had been dipped in iodine.
"How do you do, Mr. Chernobog?"
"I do old. My guts ache, and my back hurts, and I cough my chest apart every morning."
"Why are you standing at the door?"
asked a woman's voice. Shadow looked over Chernobog's shoulder at the old woman standing behind him. She was smaller and frailer than her sister, but her hair was long and still golden.
"I am Zorya Utrenyaya," she said. You must not stand there in the hall. You must go in, sit down. I will bring you coffee.
Through the doorway into an apartment that smelled like overboiled cabbage and catbox and unfiltered foreign cigarettes, and they were ushered through a tiny hallway past several closed doors to the sitting room at the far end of the corridor and were seated on a huge old horsehair sofa, disturbing an elderly gray cat in the process, who stretched, stood up, and walked stiffly to a distant part of the sofa, where he lay down, warily stared at each of them in turn, then closed one eye and went back to sleep. Chernobog sat in an armchair across from them. Zorya Utrenyaya found an empty ashtray and placed it beside Chernobog.
"How you want your coffee?" she asked her guests. "Here we take it black as night. Sweet as sin."
"That'll be fine, ma'am," said Shadow. He looked out of the window at the buildings across the street. Zorya Utrenyaya went out. Chernobog stared at her as she left.
"That's a good woman," he said. "Not like her sisters. One of them is a harpy. The other, all she does is sleep."
He put his slippered feet up on a long, low coffee table, a chessboard inset in the middle, cigarette burns and mug rings on its surface. "Is she your wife?" asked Shadow.
"She's nobody's wife."
The old man sat in silence for a moment, looking down at his rough hands.
"No. We are all relatives. We come over here together long time ago."
From the pocket of his bathrobe, Chernobog produced a pack of unfiltered cigarettes. Wednesday pulled out a narrow gold lighter and lit the old man's cigarette.
"First, we come to New York," said Chernobog. "All our countrymen go to New York. Then we come out here to Chicago. Everything got very bad. Even in the old country, they had nearly forgotten me. Here, I am just a bad memory. You know what I did when I got to Chicago?"
"No," said Shadow.
"I get a job in the meat business, on the kill floor. When the steer comes up the ramp, I was a knocker. You know why we are called knockers? It's because we take the sledgehammer and we knock the cow down with it. Bam! It takes strength in the arms, yes? Then the shackler chains the beef up, holds it up, then they cut the throat. They drain the blood first before they cut the head off. We were the strongest, the knockers."
He pushed up the sleeve of his bathrobe, flexed his upper arm to display the muscles still visible under the old skin.
"He's not just strong, though. There was an art to it, to the blow. Otherwise, the cow is just stunned or angry. Then, in the 50s, they give us the bolt gun. You put it to the forehead, bam, bam. Now you think anybody can kill. Not so."
He mimed putting a metal bolt through a cow's head.
"It still takes skill."
He smiled at the memory, displaying an iron-colored tooth.
"Don't tell them cow-killing stories."
Zorya Utrenyaya carried in their coffee on a red wooden tray in small, brightly enameled cups. She gave them each a cup, then sat beside Chernobog.
"Zorya Utrenyaya is doing shopping," she said. "She will be soon back."
"We met her downstairs," said Shadow. "She says she tells fortunes."
"Yes," said her sister. "In the twilight, that is the time for lies. I do not tell good lies, so I am a poor fortune teller. And our sister, Zorya Polunochnaya, she can tell no lies at all."
The coffee was even sweeter and stronger than Shadow had expected. Shadow excused himself to use the bathroom, a closet-like room hung with several brown-spotted framed photographs of men and women in stiff Victorian poses. It was early afternoon, but already the daylight was beginning to fade. He heard voices raised from down the hall. He washed his hands in icy cold water with a sickly-smelling sliver of pink soap. Chernobog was standing in the hall as Shadow came out.
"You bring trouble," he was shouting. "Nothing but trouble. I will not listen. You will get out of my house."
Wednesday was still sitting on the sofa, sipping his coffee, stroking the gray cat. Zorya Utranyaya stood on the thin carpet, one hand nervously twining in and out of her long yellow hair. "Is there a problem?" asked Shadow.
"He is the problem," shouted Chernobog. "He is. You tell him that there is nothing will make me help him. I want him to go. I want him out of here. Both of you, go."
"Please," said Zorya Utranyaya. "Please be quiet. You wake up Zorya Polunochnaya."
"You are like him. You want me to join his madness," shouted Chernobog.
He looked as if he were on the verge of tears. A pillar of ash tumbled from his cigarette onto the threadbare hall carpet. Wednesday stood up, walked over to Chernobog. He rested his hand on Chernobog's shoulder.
"Listen," he said peaceably. "Firstly, it's not madness. It's the only way. Secondly, everyone will be there. You would not want to be left out, would you?"
"You know who I am," said Chernobog. "You know what these hens have done. You want my brother, not me. And he's gone."
A door in the hallway opened, and a sleepy female voice said, "Is something wrong?"
"Nothing is wrong, my sister," said Zorya Utranyaya. "Go back to sleep."
Then she turned to Chernobog.
"See? See what you do with all your shouting? You go back in there and sit down. Sit."
Chernobog looked as if he were about to protest, and then the fight went out of him. He looked frail suddenly, frail and lonely. The three men went back into the shabby sitting room. There was a brown nicotine ring around that room that ended about a foot from the ceiling, like the tide line in an old bathtub.
"It doesn't have to be for you," said Wednesday to Chernobog, unfazed. "If it's for your brother, it's for you as well. That's one place you dualistic types have it over the rest of us, eh?"
Chernobog said nothing.
"Speaking of Bielobog, have you heard anything from him?"
Chernobog shook his head. He looked up at Shadow.
"Do you have a brother?"
"No," said Shadow. "Not that I know of."
"I have a brother. They say, you put us together, we are like one person, you know. When we are young, his hair, it is very blonde, very light. And people say he is the good one. And my hair, it is very dark, darker than yours even, and people say I am the rogue, you know. I am the bad one. And now time passes, and my hair is gray. His hair, too, I think, is gray. And you look at us, you would not know who was light, who was dark."
"Were you close?" asked Shadow.
"Close?"
asked Chernobog.
"No. How could we be? We cared about such different things."
There was a clatter from the end of the hall, and Zorya the Chernyaya came in.
"Supper in 1 hour," she said.
Then she went out. Chernobog sighed.
"She thinks she is a good cook," he said. "She was brought up, there were servants to cook. Now, there are no servants. There is nothing."
"Not nothing," said Wednesday. "Never nothing."
"You," said Chernobog, "I shall not listen to you."
He turned to Shadow.
"Do you play checkers?"
he asked.
"Yes,"
said Shadow.
"Good. You shall play checkers with me," he said, taking a wooden box of pieces from the mantelpiece and shaking them out onto the table. "I shall play black."
Wednesday touched Shadow's arm. "You don't have to do this, you know," he said.
"Not a problem."
"I want to," said Shadow. Wednesday shrugged and picked up an old copy of the Reader's Digest from a small pile of yellowing magazines on the windowsill. Chernobog's brown fingers finished arranging the pieces on the squares, and the game began. in the days that were to come. Shadow often found himself remembering that game. Some nights he dreamed of it. His flat, round pieces were the color of old, dirty wood, nominally white. Chernobog's were a dull, faded black. Shadow was the first to move. In his dreams, there was no conversation as they played, just the loud click as the pieces were put down, or the hiss of wood against wood as they were slid from square to adjoining square. For the first half-dozen moves, each of the men slipped pieces out onto the board, into the center, leaving the back rows untouched. There were pauses between the moves, long, chess-like pauses, while each man watched and thought. Shadow had played checkers in prison. It passed the time. He had played chess, too, but he wasn't temperamentally suited to planning ahead. He preferred picking the perfect move for the moment. You could win in checkers like that, sometimes. There was a click as Chernobog picked up a black piece and jumped it over one of Shadow's white pieces. The old man picked up Shadow's white piece and put it on the table at the side of the board.
"First blood! You have lost," said Chernobog. "The game is done."
"No," said Shadow. "Game's got a long way to go yet."
"Then would you care for a wager? A little side bet to make it more interesting?"
"No," said Wednesday, without looking up from a humor in uniform column. "He wouldn't."
"I am not playing with you, old man. I play with him." "So, you want to bet on the game, Mr. Shadow?"
"What were you two arguing about before?" asked Shadow. Chernobog raised a craggy eyebrow.
"Your master wants me to come with him, to help him with his nonsense. I would rather die."
"You want to bet? Okay. If I win, you come with us." The old man pursed his lips.
"Perhaps," he said. "But only if you take my forfeit when you lose."
"And that would be?" There was no change in Chernobog's expression.
"If I win, I get to knock your brains out with the sledgehammer. First you go down on your knees, then I hit you a blow with it so you don't get up again."
Shadow looked at the man's old face, trying to read him. He wasn't joking. Shadow was certain of that. There was a hunger there for something, for pain or death or retribution. Wednesday closed the Reader's Digest. "This is ridiculous," he said. "I was wrong to come here. Shadow, we're leaving." The gray cat, disturbed, got to its feet and stepped onto the table beside the checkers game. It stared at the pieces, then leaped down onto the floor, and, tail held high, it stalked from the room. "No," said Shadow. He wasn't scared of dying. After all, it was not as if he had anything to live for. "It's fine, I accept. If you win the game, you get the chance to knock my brains out with one blow of your sledgehammer." And he moved his next white piece to the adjoining square on the edge of the board. Nothing more was said, but Wednesday did not pick up his Reader's Digest again. He watched the game with his glass eye and his true eye with an expression that betrayed nothing. Chernobog took another of Shadow's pieces. Shadow took two of Chernobog's. From the corridor came the smell of unfamiliar foods cooking. While not all of the smells were appetizing, Shadow realized suddenly how hungry he was. The two men moved their pieces, black and white, turn and turn about. A flurry of pieces taken, a blossoming of two-piece-high kings, no longer forced to move only forward on the board, a sideways slip at a time, the kings could move forward or back, which made them doubly dangerous. They had reached the furthest row and could go where they wanted. Chernobog had three kings, Shadow had two. Chernobog moved one of his kings around the board, eliminating Shadow's remaining pieces, while using the other two kings to keep Shadow's pieces pinned down. And then Chernobog made a fourth king and returned down the board to Shadow's two kings and, unsmiling, took them both. And that was that.
So, said Chernobog, I get to knock out your brains, and you will go on your knees willingly. It's good.
He reached out an old hand and patted Shadow's arm with it. We've still got time before dinner's ready, said Shadow. You want another game? Same terms? Chernobog lit another cigarette from a kitchen box of matches.
How can it be same terms? You want I should kill you twice?
Right now, you have one blow, that's all. You told me yourself that it's not just strength, it's skill, too. This way, if you win this game, you get two blows to my head. Chernobog glowered.
One blow is all it takes. One blow. That is the art.
He patted his upper right arm, where the muscles were, with his left, scattering gray ash from the cigarette in his left hand. It's been a long time. If you've lost your skill, you might simply bruise me. How long has it been since you swung a killing hammer in the stockyards? 30 years? 40? Chernobog said nothing. His closed mouth was a gray slash across his face. He tapped his fingers on the wooden table, drumming out a rhythm with them. Then he pushed the 24 checkers back to their home squares on the board.
Play, he said. Again you are light, I am dark.
Shadow pushed his first piece out. Chernobog pushed one of his own pieces forward. And it occurred to Shadow that Chernobog was going to try to play the same game again, the one that he had just won, that this would be his limitation. This time Shadow played recklessly. He snatched tiny opportunities, moved without thinking, without a pause to consider. And this time, as he played, Shadow smiled. And whenever Chernobog moved a piece, Shadow smiled wider. Soon Chernobog was slamming his pieces down as he moved them, banging them down on the wooden table so hard that the remaining pieces shivered on their black squares.
There!
Said Chernobog, taking one of Shadow's men with a crash, slamming the black piece down.
There! What do you say to that?
Shadow said nothing. He simply smiled and jumped the piece that Chernobog had put down, and another, and another, and a fourth, clearing the center of the board of black pieces. He took a white piece from the pile beside the board and kinged his man. After that, it was just a mopping-up exercise. Another handful of moves, and the game was done. Shadow said, Best of three? Chernobog simply stared at him, his gray eyes like points of steel. And then he laughed, clapped his hands on Shadow's shoulders.
I like you, he exclaimed. You have balls.
Then Zorya Utrenyaya put her head around the door to tell them that dinner was ready, and they should clear their game away and put the tablecloth down on the table.
We have no dining room, she said. I am sorry, we eat in here.
Serving dishes were placed on the table. Each of the diners was given a small painted tray on which was some tarnished cutlery to hold on his or her lap. Zorya Vechernyaya took 5 wooden bowls and placed an unpeeled boiled potato in each, then ladled in a healthy serving of a ferociously crimson borscht. She plopped a spoonful of white sour cream in and handed the bowls to each of them. I thought there were 6 of us, said Shadow.
Zorya Polunochnaya is still asleep, said Zorya Vechernyaya. We keep her food in the refrigerator. When she wakes, she will eat.
The borscht was vinegary and tasted like pickled beets. The boiled potato was mealy. The next course was a leathery pot roast, accompanied by greens of some description, although they had been boiled so long and so thoroughly that they were no longer, by any stretch of the imagination, greens, and were in fact well on their way to becoming browns. Then there were cabbage leaves, stuffed with ground meat and rice, cabbage leaves of such a toughness that they were almost impossible to cut without spattering ground meat and rice all over the carpet. Shadow pushed his around his plate.
We played checkers, said Chernobog,
hacking himself another lump of pot roast.
The young man and me. He won a game, I won a game. Because he won a game, I have agreed to go with him and Wednesday and help them in their madness. And because I won a game, when this is all done, I get to kill the young men with a blow of a hammer.
The two Zoryas nodded gravely.
Such a pity, Zorya Vechernaya told Shadow. In my fortune for you, I should have said you would have a long life and a happy one with many children.
That is why you are a good fortune teller, said Zorya Utranyaya.
She looked sleepy, as if it were an effort for her to be up so late.
You tell the best lies.
At the end of the meal, Shadow was still hungry. Prison food had been pretty bad, and prison food was better than this.
Good food,
said Wednesday, who had cleaned his plate with every evidence of enjoyment.
Thank you, ladies, and now I'm afraid that it is incumbent upon us to ask you to recommend to us a fine hotel in the neighborhood.
Zoya Vechernaya looked offended at this.
Why should you go to a hotel? She said. We are not your friends.
I couldn't put you to any trouble, said Wednesday.
Is no trouble, said Zorya Utranyaya,
one hand playing with her incongruously golden hair, and she yawned.
You can sleep in Yellowbog's room,
said Zorya Vechernaya, pointing to Wednesday.
It's empty, and for you, young man, I make up a bed on sofa. You will be more comfortable than in feather bed, I swear.
That would be really kind of you, said Wednesday. We accept.
And you pay me only no more than what you pay for hotel, said Zorya Vechernaya with a triumphant toss of her head. $100.
30, said Wednesday.
50.
35.
45.
40
is good, $45.
Zorya Vechernaya reached across the table and shook Wednesday's hand. Then she began to clean the pots off the table. Zorya Utranyaya yawned so hugely, Shadow worried that she might dislocate her jaw, and announced that she was going to bed before she fell asleep with her head in the pie. And she said good night to them all. Shadow helped Zorya Vechernaya to take the plates and dishes into the little kitchen. To his surprise, there was an elderly dishwashing machine beneath the sink, and he filled it. Zorya Vechernaya looked over his shoulder, tutted, and removed the wooden borscht bowls.
Those in the sink, she told him.
Sorry.
He's not to worry. Now, back in there, we have pie, she said.
The pie, it was an apple pie, had been bought in a store and oven-warmed and was very, very good. The four of them ate it with ice cream, and then Zorya Vechernaya made everyone go out of the sitting room and made up a very fine-looking bed on the sofa for Shadow. Wednesday spoke to Shadow as they stood in the corridor.
What you did in there with the checkers game, he said.
Yes.
That was good. Very, very stupid of you, but good. Sleep safe.
Shadow brushed his teeth and washed his face in the cold water of the little bathroom, and then walked back down the hall to the sitting room, turned out the light, and was asleep before his head touched the pillow. There were explosions in Shadow's dream. He was driving a truck through a minefield, and bombs were going off on each side of him. The windshield shattered, and he felt warm blood running down his face. Someone was shooting at him. A bullet punctured his lung. A bullet shattered his spine. Another hit his shoulder. He felt each bullet strike. He collapsed across the steering wheel. The last explosion ended in darkness. I must be dreaming, thought Shadow, alone in the darkness. I think I just died. He remembered hearing and believing, as a child, that if you died in your dreams, you would die in real life. He didn't feel dead. He opened his eyes experimentally. There was a woman in the little sitting room, standing against the window with her back to him. His heart missed a half-beat, and he said, "Laura?" She turned, framed by the moonlight. "I'm sorry," she said. "I did not mean to wake you." She had a soft Eastern European accent. "I will go."
"No, it's okay," said Shadow. "You didn't wake me. I had a dream."
"Yes," she said. "You were crying out and moaning. Part of me wanted to wake you, but I thought, no, I should leave him. Her hair was pale and colorless in the moon's thin light. She wore a thin white cotton nightgown with a high lace neck and a hem that swept the ground. Shadow sat up, entirely awake. "You are Zoria Poloop," he hesitated. "The sister who was asleep."
"I am Zoria Polunochnaya, yes. And you are called Shadow, yes? That was what Zoria Vechernaya told me when I woke."
"Yes. What were you looking at, out there?" She looked at him. Then she beckoned him to join her by the window. She turned her back while he pulled on his jeans. He walked over to her. It seemed a long walk for such a small room. He couldn't tell her age. Her skin was unlined. Her eyes were dark. Her lashes were long. Her hair was to her waist and white. The moonlight drained colors into ghosts of themselves. She was taller than either of her sisters. She pointed up into the night sky.
"I was looking at that," she said, pointing to the Big Dipper. "See?"
"Ursa Major," he said, "the Great Bear."
"That is one way of looking at it," she said, "but it is not the way from where I come from. I'm going to sit on the roof. Would you like to come with me?"
She lifted the window and clambered barefoot out onto the fire escape. A freezing wind blew through the window. Something was bothering Shadow, but he didn't know what it was. He hesitated, then pulled on his sweater, socks, and shoes, and followed her out onto the rusting fire escape. She was waiting for him. His breath steamed in the chilly air. He watched her bare feet pad up the icy metal steps and followed her up to the roof. The wind gusted cold, flattening her nightgown against her body, and Shadow became uncomfortably aware that Zoria Polunochnaya was wearing nothing at all underneath. "You don't mind the cold?" he said, as they reached the top of the fire escape and the wind whipped his words away.
"Sorry?"
She bent her face close to his. Her breath was sweet. "I said, doesn't the cold bother you?" In reply, she held up a finger. "Wait." She stepped lightly over the side of the building and onto the flat roof. Shadow stepped over a little more clumsily and followed her across the roof to the shadow of the water tower. There was a wooden bench waiting for them there, and she sat down on it, and he sat down beside her. The water tower acted as a windbreak, for which Shadow was grateful.
"No," she said, "the cold does not bother me. This time is my time. I could no more feel uncomfortable in the night than a fish could feel uncomfortable in the deep water."
"You must like the night," said Shadow, wishing that he had said something wiser, more profound.
"My sisters are of their times. Zoria Utranaya is of the dawn. In the old country she would wake to open the gates and let our father drive his... I forget the word, like a car, but with horses.
Chariot?
His chariot. Our father would ride it out. And Zoria Vechernaya, she would open the gates for him at dusk when he returned to us."
"And you?" She paused. Her lips were full, but very pale.
"I never saw our father. I was asleep."
"Is it a medical condition?" She didn't answer. The shrug, if she shrugged, was imperceptible.
"So, you wanted to know what I was looking at?"
"The Big Dipper." She raised an arm to point to it, and the wind flattened her nightgown against her body. Her nipples, every goosebump on the areole, were visible momentarily, dark against the white cotton. Shadow shivered.
"Odin's Wain, they call it, and the Great Bear. Where we come from, we believe that is a thing, a... not a god, but like a god. A bad thing chained up in those stars. If it escapes, it will eat the whole of everything. And there are three sisters who must watch the sky all the day, all the night. If he escapes, the thing in the stars, the world is over. Piff, like that.